as Phil alluded to, I think all three of us are excited about our first guest tonight. He took the Owls of Florida Atlantic to the NIT in a 21-game winning season in 2010-2011. He is one of eight coaches who won 100 or more games with three different teams. If he accomplishes that same feat, which we expect him to do with Florida Atlantic, he'll be one of two coaches, which include Lefty Giselle, who has done it with four schools. Please welcome head coach of the Florida Atlantic Owls, Mike Jarvis. Coach Jarvis, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be on. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
Coach Jarvis, you so know all of us have a lot of respect for you, so we're definitely excited to hear about what you're doing at Florida Atlantic, but also just to hear your perspective and talk a little bit about your journey as a coach. As I mentioned in my opening, you are one of eight coaches who have won 100 or more games in three different institutions. Can you talk a little bit about how your coaching philosophy has developed over the years through the different institutions where you've worked?
Well, you know, I'm really blessed. I mean, I've been coaching at a time when there were very, very few black coaches in the profession. You know, started out teaching in high school and then was fortunate enough to get to be an assistant coach in college while I was teaching, and then, eventually got a chance to coach at my alma mater at Cambridge Ranger Latin and work with a couple of guys that the good Lord sent me by the name of Patrick Ewing and Ramil Robinson, and that led to Boston University, and that led to George Washington, and that led to St. John's, and then ESPN, and now I'm at Florida Atlantic trying to build a program that's really, you know, never been before, with my son, who's my associate head coach, and my really competent assistant. So it's been an incredible journey and a lot of fun, and at all different levels, and I've enjoyed every minute of it.
You coached Patrick Ewing in high school. For some of our listeners under 30 who may not understand how great Patrick Ewing was as a player. Can you talk about Patrick Ewing, his development, and just the experience of coaching a phenom like that?
Well, you know, once again, it was a different time. I don't know if I would have ever been able to do what I did with Patrick and for Patrick in this day and age with all the, you know, the people that get a hold of these kids at a very young age. But, you know, I had the total blessing of his mother, Dorothy, to help to develop him, and not only to a basketball player, but also as a student and as a person. And, you know, I first started working with Patrick before I ever coached him formally when he was in junior high school. I used to teach he and his phys ed teacher the game of basketball. And then, a few years later, I got a chance to coach him in high school. One of the most competitive people that I've ever had the opportunity to work with. And, during our time together in high school, we won three consecutive state championships. We're number one in the country. Lost one game. And, in fact, people say, how'd you lose that game? And I say, real simple. Patrick was sick that night. We lost to the state champs of Connecticut. And but nobody practiced harder, worked harder. And he just developed. He went from being a skinny, gangly kid that everybody used to laugh at to a guy that ended up making $18 million his last year of playing basketball. And, just a winner. I mean, a winner, a warrior. And, his career at Georgetown and with the Olympics and with the Knicks, I mean, you know, you just don't get too many players. In fact, there's probably no more than 10 players in the history of the game that were any better than Patrick.
You talked about, when talking about Patrick, you talked about how much different it was back then. And I know you've been somewhat, you might, and what I'm sensing, if I may be wrong, somewhat outspoken about the impact that folks have had on particularly AAU and other folks in terms of the ability to really engage these athletes. How has that impacted you in terms of your current recruitment strategy with Florida Atlantic?
Well, you know, I wish I could say it hasn't impacted me at all. I wish I could honestly say that, you know, nothing has really changed. But the reality is that so much has changed. And what it's made me do, me personally, is really even become even more committed to getting the right kids to come to our school And, you know, you make mistakes, but I think I find myself now really, really trying to find the right character guys so that everybody can have fun. Because, you know, what I found today is that most of the kids that play today, majority of them are not about winning. They're about stats. They're about playing, you know, for the to get to the next level. And only a very, very, you know, minuscule number of kids are ever going to do that. So I'm trying to recruit guys now like I used to do in the old days and, you know, maybe get some guys like I had back in at Boston U or GW or St. John's that, you know, were about the team first and didn't really care about their stats, you know, unless their team won. And that's the challenge because, like I said, the kids today, very, very different. You know, it's mostly about them and that's why you see hundreds and hundreds of kids transferring every year.
Coach, you heard in our opening and talking a little about this, sometimes, you know, it's as you're trying to find about fit, and, you know, obviously there was a lot of discussion last week with what happened at Wisconsin in terms of blocking transfers and, you know, freedom of players to go different places. Can you talk a little bit about the whole idea of the discussion about the movement of players and the idea of trying to build a program and the right fit? I think all those issues came up last week. What was your perspective on this kind of a national conversation about athletes and their ability to go from one place to the other?
Well, first of all, you know, I mean, you know, there's three sides to every story. And, you know, and on one hand, you know, I know people are saying, well, you know, kids should be able to move and go where they want to go. And there's some truth to that. But at the same time, you know, when guys, you know, go to a program, you know, they should be going there to get an education first and then to develop their basketball game second. And in the process, realize that it's not going to happen yesterday. And the problem today is that so many of these kids, they'll tell you that they want it like immediately, and they you know, they don't want to many times pay the price and play the patient game because, you know, they're thinking they're going to be one and done or two and done. And, you know, and I mean, there are kids transferring that are playing 38 and 39 minutes a game and leading their team and scoring. And you know, a lot of kids now that are going to schools with the idea that they'll have a good year and then they'll transfer up. And, I mean, that it's really, I think it's doing it's hurting the game a lot. Now, there are extenuating circumstances that may arise that a kid, you know, just may have made a bad decision, you know, or maybe somebody made the decision for him as he went to school, or maybe there's a home situation that would, you know, necessitate him coming back home. But the majority of the kids today, they're not transferring for those reasons. They're transferring because they want to get, you know, they want to get more minutes, they want to get more stats, they want to, you know, further their game. And I don't think a lot of them really think about the impact that it's having on their team. And that, to me, is the problem. And, you know, like last week, I'm sure, you know, last week you guys have been talking a lot about the Wisconsin situation. And, you know, what we hear sometimes as coaches might be a little different than what maybe the listening audience might hear. For example, you know, I was told that it's very possible that maybe the youngster never even contacted his coach. I mean, so you got kids sometimes leaving situations before they even talk to their coach, let alone their teammates.
You're listening to The Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. We're on with Florida Atlantic coach Mike Jarvis. And, Coach, I really respect that perspective about the delayed gratification. And we've had a lot of debate around that on our show, and separating out the right versus the what's the educational benefit. So I really appreciate that. As that is the context for you shaping your program, and I like the idea, and I believe some coaches are going to have to just go back to the old school philosophy, looking for the diamond in the roughs, thinking about how they want to build their programs that way. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, your current team? You had a really good year in 2010, 2011. Mm-hmm. You really built some steam. get a little step back this past year. But, you know, right now you got a player like Raymond Taylor who is foregoing his senior year, so you obviously have talented players who you've been able to upgrade and bring to the program. Can you talk a little bit about some of the players? And maybe let's just start with Raymond Taylor in terms of his decision to forego a senior year and what he's meant to your program.
Well, first of all, let me just say this. You know, we had a great year, our third year in. You know,
yes.
We go from winning 6 games to winning 20-plus games and winning the Sun Belt regular season tournament. I mean, we had a great year and beat some really, really good teams. And this year, we did not have, I mean, we had a bad year. And I say a bad year because we were in every game except for 2, and yet we couldn't finish and, you know, and win the games in the end. And, you know, we're no different than a lot of people. We've got, you know, Ray Taylor, little Ray, 5'6" of him, you know, feels that, you know, he can play at the next level. And, you know, he leaves school, and only time will tell, you know, whether or not that was a bad decision or a very bad decision. So we're going to, you know, unfortunately, he's going to find out sooner than later that, you know, maybe it wasn't the right decision. I mean, we certainly, I'm hoping that somehow, you know, he can perform the unthinkable and make it, you know, at this stage of his development. You know, but you can't, I mean, you know, you can't make people do things. And he felt that, you know, he wanted to give it a shot and not wait another year to try. And it's going to be very difficult, you know, when you're looking at a guy who's only 5'6" tall. And, you know, plus he's coming off a team that only won 11 games last year. And, you know, so we deal with the same issues at our level that bigger schools do at their level. You know, the difference is a lot of the kids at the bigger schools, you know, you take Kentucky. I mean, those kids are going there with the idea they're going to be one and done. You know, you'd like to hope that the kids that come to a school like ours, they're coming with the idea it's going to be 4 and graduate and then see what happens. But so, you know, we've got guys that, you know, that will think they're ready and leave as well. And you just hope and pray that they're right. Unfortunately, majority of the times the kids are wrong. And because only a few guys are going to make it to the NBA, you know, next year. I mean, what's the number? You probably know the number better than I of kids, of new players in the NBA. It's not very many.
No, it's not very many. And, you know, before I hand it over to my partner, Phil, to ask a question, and I love the way you're approaching this and the fact that you're also doing it with your son, because we want to dig into your team a little bit. But talk with us, men, about being in this experience and coaching with your son and doing that, what that's meant to you.
Well, it's meant everything to me. You know, I am so blessed. I mean, I've been married to the same woman. We're going to celebrate. My wife, Connie, and I will celebrate our 45th anniversary in September. My son, Mike, has been with me for 43 years. He was my bat boy as a three-year-old, you know, up to about age 8. And when I was coaching freshman baseball in high school, he was my ball boy at Cambridge Ridge and Latin. He played for me in high school, played for me in college. And when he graduated from Boston University, he was my assistant. In fact, the first year, imagine coming out in the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament as the Cinderella 12th seed to play the Michigan Fab Five in front of 41,000 people in Seattle, and we almost beat him. And he's my assistant back then. He's been with me every year except for a couple when, you know, we were out of coaching after St. John's. He went to work at Duke with Mike Krzyzewski, and when I went back into coaching, he called and said, "Dad, I want to get back into the business as well." And it's been a blessing. It's the greatest trophy that any coach could ever, ever, ever have. The greatest award or achievement is to have their son working with them side by side. And, you know, it makes life that much more meaningful every day knowing that I'm going to be with my son. And, you know, the hardest day in my life is probably going to be, and, you know, hopefully it's not too long when he's a head coach and he has to, you know, say goodbye to his dad. But it's been great. And, you know, we were the first African-American father-son coaching tandem in the history of the of Division I basketball. A lot of people don't know that, but we were the first, and hopefully we won't be the last.
You're listening to Real Sports Guys on RealSportsGuys.com. We have the privilege of speaking to Florida Atlantic's head coach, Mike Jarvis. Coach, talk a little bit about your incoming recruiting class and players that you think will contribute to your team right away, including your players that are coming back.
Yeah, well, first of all, we've got Greg Gant, who's going to be a senior next year coming back, and he's been an all-league player and, you know, been our leading scorer for the last couple of seasons. And, you know, Greg's a shooting guard, and, you know, so we're counting a lot on him. And our best recruit actually was a redshirt last year, 7-foot youngster from Croatia that actually originally was at Baylor. You talk about transfers, and, you know, he transferred. He's my only transfer, but he's 7 foot. He's got a lot of talent. Dragon is a heck of a player, and I think he's going to be one of the best big men in the Sun Belt Conference. And we're going to bring in a full class. I mean, really what we're doing this year is we're starting all over again. We're going to have 6 new guys coming in. I've got one of the most incredible athletic guards I've ever recruited, a kid by the name of Stephen Moody out of Poinciana, Florida. This guy plays, I mean, at 5'10", I mean, he's a guy that you will constantly be playing above the square. I mean, this guy is he just jumps out of the gym and he can play. I've seen him, you know, get 40 and 50 without even trying. And, you know, Chris Bryant, 6'8", youngster, was player of the year a couple years ago, went to prep school. You know, he was player of the year in Florida out of Tallahassee. Jackson Trapp, you know, 6'4", shooting guard. You know, I got a young man coming in from Spain, another 6'9" guy. I got Devontae Thornton coming out of Atlanta, about 6'7", 6'8", wing. So we're going to have size, finally going to have a team with some size at different positions. We're going to be, I think, much more athletic than we've ever been. And, you know, you combine those new guys, you know, with Greg Gant and Jordan McCoy and Andre Madison and Pablo Patron and, you know, the guys that are coming back, I think we're going to be deep. I think we're going to really be able to play the kind of basketball that I want to play. And, you know, I think our very best is ahead of us. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to next season.
Now, Coach, you're currently at Florida Atlantic. I've always been interested to know how coaches, especially at mid-major schools, how they schedule their season in order to peak at the right time. Can you talk a little bit about your philosophy in setting up your schedule now that you're at Florida Atlantic?
Well, first of all, when you're at the mid or low Division I schools, there's certain things you have to do. One of the things you have to do is you got to raise money. So what you mean is you got to play 3-4 guaranteed money games. You know, you got to play, like, for example, next year we're playing North Carolina. We're playing Mississippi State. We're playing Indiana. And every one of those schools is going to pay us a decent amount of money to come and play them. Okay, so that helps you basically run your program. But it also gives you national, big-time national exposure. So my hope and my prayer is that we'll be able to compete in those games, be in a position, you know, on a given night to maybe knock off one of those people. If you do, then you are already established yourself and you're on the map. And if you can compete with them, you know, then what it's going to do is going to set you up when you play in conference. So, you know, we've got a 20-game Sun Belt Conference schedule, plus the money games, plus we play home and homes with teams like Harvard University, who should win the Ivy League, and Hofstra out of the Colonial. We play George Mason. I mean, so we have a really good non-league schedule, but with some balance. And we try to play teams from different conferences so that if you have a good year, then they can look at your schedule and they can say, okay, you know, you compete against teams from the Big East or from the ACC or the SEC or the Atlantic 10, and you beat some of those people. So now you got a chance of not only getting a bid, you know, getting into the tournament by winning your league tournament, but, you know, hopefully you get to a point where you're good enough, we get in that large bid. That's what we did when we were at George Washington. So you got to play up. I mean, you really do. And at the same time, you got to try to get enough games, home games, so you have a chance of winning, because the home team wins most of the time.
You're listening to Real Sports Guys on RealSportsGuys.com. We've got head coach of Florida Atlantic, Mike Jarvis, on the line. Now, Coach.
Yes.
Devon and I are both from Michigan. The Fab Five, that was one of my favorite teams of all time. You know, we got a couple more minutes with you.
Okay.
I've got to ask you, what are your memories from that Sweet 16 game that you spoke of earlier in Seattle?
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, I mean, the fact that we weren't supposed to be there, we had the most incredible ride that you could imagine. We end up out there, and like I said, it's 41,000. It's the national game of the day. CBS is saying, oh, this is going to be a massacre. What are we doing this game for? Billy Packer and those guys are, you know, they're scratching their head. What do we do when Michigan's up by 20, you know? You know, because in those days, I mean, when they were locked into a game, there weren't a lot of options. So what happens is the game starts out, and sure enough, those guys were right in the first half. We're down 17, Michigan's rolling. And, you know, we called timeout and said, you know what, let's press these guys. I mean, it shouldn't work, but let's press them. And sure enough, we pressed them, and they, you know, Jalen Rose and those guys started throwing the ball all over the place. And we made a mistake. See, we took the lead in the game with about 3-4 minutes to go, and they actually ended up beating us by getting their missed shots on free throws and putting the ball back in. I think they did that like 3 times. If we box out and we get rebounds off of their missed free throws, we upset them. And, I mean, we're moving on to the Elite Eight. So the fact that we weren't supposed to be there, and then we put ourselves in a position to actually win the game, I mean, we scared the living you-know-what out of those guys. And they whatever respect they didn't have for us, they had for us by the end of the game. And it put GW on the map, because when I first went to Washington, D.C., I remember going down Constitution Ave and stopping at one of the vendors and saying, hey, where's the GW gear? And the guy laughed at me and said, GW what? We don't have any GW gear. We got Georgetown gear. And by the time we left Washington, D.C., when I went to St. John's, they were selling a lot of GW gear, and GW was on the map. And so that was the game that put us on the map.
You're on with the Real Sports Guys. We're on with Mike Jarvis, coach at Florida Atlantic. Coach, before we close out, one of the things that we've been doing a lot is talking about the state of college sports. And
okay,
we would be remiss to have you on the show and not hit into some of the things that you spoke about earlier. We have talked a lot about all of us value education. We all have, at least two of us have worked in higher education. I continue to do so and have been invested in with student athletes. What are some of the things that you need to see that need to change to increase the academic engagement of our college athletes in terms of the academic side of the institution? What things as a coach, if you were part of a Blue Ribbon committee, would allow for you to have a better balance with your athletes to get them more engaged in the academic life of the institution?
Well, I think, you know, a big part of going to college is building a resume. A big part of going to college is preparing for life after basketball. And I think that more, you know, community involvement, more somehow incorporating the life of the student into the community where they can be actually, you know, giving back and at the same time moving forward, somehow, you know, taking the things that they're learning in the classroom and share them within the community and get credit for doing that, I think would serve everybody well. And, you know, I see, my whole thing is that, you know, it's one thing to get a degree. It's another thing to get an education. And I think a lot of schools today award degrees. I think a lot of people are concerned about our kids graduating much more than they're concerned about our kids really being educated. And are they learning something that they can then use to get a job? Because in the end, it's all about a J-O-B. So I just wish that, you know, that the student athletes, they spend most of their time majoring in eligibility, taking, you know, whatever courses they're taking so that they can be eligible, as opposed to really, really being prepared and you know, for the marketplace and the job place after college. So I just, you know, I just wish that there were maybe even more potential majors, the realistic majors for kids to take, you know, while they're in college, that would actually lead to real jobs when they get out of college, and you know, and take some of that work experience, maybe summer internships, and somehow find a way to build that into the school curriculum, so you know, so these kids will have an even better chance when they graduate of getting a real job.
That's Coach Jarvis, Mike Jarvis. The reason why we had him on the show, Coach, we definitely appreciate having you on the show. We would love to invite you back to not only talk about the Owls, but to also talk about some of these other issues that we are engaging in around college sports. And we look forward to having another conversation with you soon.
Well, thank you. I've really enjoyed it. And you guys, you know, by probing and getting into, you know, things other than what you would see on, let's say, on SportsCenter, I think is really vital. And I compliment you guys and commend you, you know, for doing what the John Thompsons of the world years ago used to do at the conventions and get guys to really think out of the box. So thanks for having me on. I look forward to being on with you guys again. Maybe, you know, it'd be nice also to be on when I'm taking a team to the NCAA tournament, which I think is going to happen within the next year or two at FAU.
We know that, Coach, and good luck, and we look forward to having you on again. Take care.
Well, thank you.
That was Mike Jarvis, head coach, Florida Atlantic University, the Owls. Incredible person. You understand what we're trying to do with the show. These are the type of folks that we're trying to have on the show. And I'm gonna bring my guy, the Game Changer, back on. Game Changer, I know you were over there with the notes. You had the book out. I know you were reflecting. What were your thoughts about?
Wow. Wow. Excellent interview. Again, thank you to Mike, to Coach Mike Jarvis of Florida Atlantic University. You know, he compared us to John Thompson, man. I'm bugging. You know how I get down, man. That's one of my heroes. And to be compared with Big John, man, is crazy. But some things that Coach Jarvis talked about, his reflection on the whole transfer, how to handle transfers and how to negotiate the transfer process. You know, I don't fully agree with his perspective, but I understand where he's coming from as a coach. You know, we'll talk about this more when we get into the Bo Ryan, Wisconsin situation. But as a coach, you do want to try and understand why a kid is leaving your program because of the investment that you put into a kid when you recruit him. And I completely understand that there are a lot of resources that go into recruiting one player. And then when that player leaves, you really want to try, before you let that investment walk away, you really want an opportunity to hear them out and have them hear you out. And I think, you know, that can be a tough dance for a coach to do when you have a kid who really just wants to leave. And, you know, you quoted all the time, Dean Smith said that, you know, he knew it was time for him to find a different line of work when he looked around and realized that his livelihood depended upon the decisions of 18 and 19-year-olds. That's what you have with a lot of transfer situations, is guys who are young men, young athletes, looking to meet a set of priorities that may not necessarily fall in line with the priorities of the coach. The player's got a different agenda. The coach has a different agenda. And that player wants to fulfill his dream, whatever that may be. And sometimes that doesn't jive with what the coach wants. And that's where you have these mismatches of need and what's provided by the program.
Part of where I'm mixed on this or kind of struggling is, because there's two things. One aspect of the question is the free market society. So that's one part of it. But then there's an educational value conversation. And it's not unlike even when students who are not student athletes look to transfer, who might be a part of programs or part of where they have exit interviews or talking to advisors who want to know why they're transferred to a new institution. Is it a goodness of fit? So I think part of what I try to wrap my head around this is, from the educational side of it, let's have that conversation. And then there's the free market conversation. Well, in the free market conversation, everything people are probably going to debate is probably right. There's a hypocrisy. From the educational benefit side of it, and I think this is where Coach Jarvis got into it, about how these young – because nobody's talking about how these young people make decisions. everybody's talking about their right to make a decision. And I say those are two different things, because the downfall of a 30 or 40-year-old making a decision about leaving versus an 18, 19-year-old is two different things. Repercussions of this young man, Raymond Taylor, going to the league versus doing what he might do in his school have much more repercussions than Mike Jarvis deciding to go coach at Miami. And I think that people are not talking about that.
I don't know about that, man. I don't know about that.
Yes, it is. You know, you've been around college kids long enough to know that.
But
are you saying
that a coach leaving has less of an impact than
leaving? I'm talking about the impact on them personally by making a decision. I'm not talking about an impact on the program. See, again, we talked about free market and business. What I'm talking about, the impact on
right.
you.
Right, and I would say yes, on them personally. Yeah. But when you have a figurehead who ups and jumps ship from a program, I think that you're leaving not only – his life personally may not be affected, but he just affected the lives of 15 athletes who were committed to him who now have to figure out whether or not they belong in that environment anymore when a coach leaves.
But you could talk about a whole bunch of other settings where administrators leave as well that impact people's livelihoods. And what I'm saying is that part is always going to change. That's like staff at universities leave all the time.
As a student of that university, you don't go there because of the because of the advising. I tell high school athletes this all the time, man. You only get to pick your coach once in your whole life. You only get to pick your coach one time, and that's when you get recruited to go to college. When that person leaves, that is a big part of your life that is going to be being controlled by someone you didn't approve.
I'm going to tell you right now, and we don't quote a lot of shows, but as Golic said, and Golic had two sons who decided to go, his advice is pick the school, not the coach.
I agree with that. But what I'm saying is that what you do, the coach is 1A. School is 1. Coach is 1A. And when that coach changes, again, this is a person that has a tremendous amount of control and influence over your life.
It
has a tremendous effect.
I understand that. My cousin was supposed to play for Calipari. Calipari recruited him. And he left, and then he was left with another coach who did not have the caliber of Calipari. I saw
and
who
may not play his style. You're talking about social emotional development. You're talking about a lot of things where kids can get depressed, all these kind of other things. If that part of your life isn't going well for a lot of these kids, it can have some tremendous effect.
But that is the part of it that we got to figure out how to address. That is the part of it that – if you at Yale and your coach, if you go to play with Tommy Annaker at Harvard and Annaker leave, if your butt leave Harvard, you are stupid.
No, you would not leave Harvard. But if you at Central Michigan, it's only one Harvard. But if you at Central Michigan and the coach at Central Michigan leaves for another dude for another job, you stuck at Central Michigan.
But we just, hey, hold up. This is not even a scholarship. This is a scholarship program. But we just had University of Whitewater coach on. Whitewater got one of the top business schools regionally in the Midwest. Now,
But what I'm talking about is
getting beyond that with athletes.
Listen, we're talking about practice.
Not a game.
We're talking about practice.
Come on, man.
Not a game. We're talking about practice.